Thank you for listening to this talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living, Midtown, Atlanta.
Always a surprise to me when I come to the fourth of these talks, like, what happened to the first three? I don't know where they went. But here we are, the fourth and final week in this January series that I've done for, this is my 14th year, on the basic principles of what we teach here. And if you've been paying attention, as most of you usually do, and thinking about these spiritual ideas that we've been talking about over the last few weeks, you may be thinking by now that these are pretty interesting ideas, maybe even transformational ideas. You may be wondering, as I did when I first showed up in 1984 over at Woodruff Arts Center, where we started this, why these ideas aren't more widely known and widely accepted in the world, since they seem to be so new and different and positive and powerful. I mean, why isn't there a center this big or larger with thousands of people in every major city in the world, in this country, everywhere else? But the truth is, these ideas are not new at all. I mean, even though these ideas may be different from the ideas that most of us were exposed to growing up in the traditional religious teachings we came from, I came out of a Catholic tradition. I know many Southerners came out of Baptist, Methodist, and all of those. These principles have been around for a very long time. Now, we call teachings like this one, this is science of mind, but teachings like unity and divine science, a number of them, they're called new thought teachings. But the only thing really new about it is that now more and more people are starting to pay attention. These ideas have crossed over into Oprah, and the Dalai Lama has been talking about this stuff for years. Even Joel Osteen, Andy Stanley, people like that here in Atlanta are taking these ideas and bringing them into their more traditional teachings and expanding the awareness of the people in their groups. Now, throughout history, there have always been at least a few men and women from every culture and every age who understood these principles and used them to enjoy their own lives and to share with other people the good news that we can all have love, joy, peace, prosperity, health, creativity, all those things in our lives. In fact, their message was, that's the way we are meant to live. And if you look back through history, I love reading history books, it's easy to tell who the people were who believed like this, because they were the people who were primarily responsible for almost all the growth that took place in the world. And I don't just mean the philosophers, the people we read about in all the religious textbooks. These people were the inventors, the explorers, the thinkers, the artists, the teachers, the activists, and the heroes, among others, all right? I mean, it wasn't just Moses and Jesus and Buddha and Mahatma Gandhi and Mother Teresa. They were, but not just them. It was also people like Thomas Edison and Helen Keller and Magellan and Da Vinci and Michelangelo and Galileo and even Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman, people from all different walks of life. In fact, if there had not been a significant number of people who chose to express life in the way that we've been talking about, which is consciously and deliberately and intelligently moving forward, taking chances, trying new things, and boldly going where no one has gone before, to take it from the Star Trek thing, if there had not been a significant number of people who lived their life this way, the human race would have destroyed itself and disappeared a long, long time ago. Now, 2,500 years ago, the Buddha said this. He said, all that we are is the result of what we have thought. The mind is everything. What we think, we become. And then 2,000 years ago, Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor and philosopher, wrote this. He said, a man's life is what his thoughts make it. And he means that generically, a human being, men and women. 400 years ago, Shakespeare said, nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And 150 years ago, Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, a man is what he thinks about all day long. Now, I like those four quotes, but there are thousands upon thousands more. I could spend hours repeating all sorts of them, all saying basically the same thing. They are all saying the life that we live and the experiences that we go through, whatever we do or whatever is done to us or around us, all of it, every single bit of it, is a direct result or a perfect reflection of our deepest thoughts, beliefs, and opinions, and the way we carry them out. Not just having them, but the way we carry out those thought, beliefs, and opinions in our life. In other words, if something is showing up out there in the physical world, in our experience, you can bet that it's already well established in here, in our consciousness. And if something we want isn't showing up in our life, which sometimes happens, it isn't because God doesn't want us to have it. It's because we have not yet accepted that thing in here, same place in our consciousness. Now, I do want to point out here something very important that I haven't talked about the last few weeks. We've been talking a lot in this teaching about using our mind. But this teaching is not just a matter of choosing the mental over the spiritual or emphasizing the brain or the head over the heart. This is not, I repeat, this is not a purely intellectual teaching. And anyone who says it is, and there are those who do, doesn't really understand it. Both aspects of our being are extremely important, the head and the heart, both our thoughts and our emotions. But the biggest problem for religion in general throughout history is not that there hasn't been enough emotion attached to it. There's been plenty of emotion attached to it, both good and not so good, ranging from ecstasy, which is quite beautiful, to fanaticism, and we see where that goes, all right? The problem with most traditional religious thinking is there hasn't been nearly enough intelligent, logical, rational thinking applied to all of that emotional and spiritual energy. That's what allows religious fundamentalism to be abused, misdirected, and manipulated, like we're seeing in the Middle East, in Africa, in Europe, in Paris over the last couple weeks, and even right here in the good old USA. I mean, there's no doubt about it, emotion can be very, very powerful, especially when we apply it to spiritual ideas, all right? When we feel like we are aligned with spirit or God, whatever you call it, however we happen to see it, it's an extremely powerful experience. But applying that spiritual energy to our daily life in a practical way requires a certain amount of good sense. It requires us to think and to make decisions, which is actually fine because, contrary to popular opinion, rational thought should not be a threat to anyone's religion. In fact, it should only make it stronger because the ability to think clearly and to make intelligent choices is the greatest spiritual gift that we have been given. That's why we have to be very clear that this teaching is not about freeing ourselves from God or spirit and trying to do it all alone using just our brain power, okay? Whenever we create something, and Dr. Ernest Holmes, who wrote the book The Science of Mind, and we're always creating, by choice or by default, you can't live a life not creating. Whenever we do this, we are actually using our mental resources, our God-given ability to think and to make choices, combined with our passion for living, as part of a spiritual process, But that process, if we do it right, should also include the mental, emotional, and physical parts of our being. We believe that any creator who was able to put this universe together, however it happened, has to be not only intelligent, it also has to be intelligence itself. It needs to be the source of all intelligence. So this creative process that goes on all the time in our lives and in the world, it has to be the intelligent activity of spirit forever involved in the process of making all things new. And it does so, I talked about this 2 weeks ago, through us as we make intelligent use of the science of mind, the laws of the science of mind. That's what we've talked about these last few weeks. Now, knowing this is important because it gives us a lot of freedom. It shows us that we don't have to spend our life searching for somebody willing to fulfill our spiritual needs. We don't have to look for someone or something to save us. We don't have to find a God or a power that can heal us. We don't have to beg for or try to earn a better life than the one we've got now. We don't have to do any of those things. But what we do need to do is to learn how to create these things for ourselves. Because everything we need, and I mean everything we need to live well, to love well, and to heal whatever is in us or around us that needs to be healed is already here. It's already ours. We just need to become aware of it and to learn the process that pulls it all together. So once we learn to change the way that we think and feel about God, about ourselves, and about the co-creative relationship between the two, then we can start enjoying our life as a lean, mean creativity machine, which is kind of what we have always been and what we are. But before we can do this, there's something getting in the way. There are some dysfunctional beliefs that at least a few of us need to change. You see, too many people in the world see themselves as victims of circumstance, as cogs in some giant machine, as puppets controlled by their past and by the people and the situations around them. And as a result, it's very interesting. They end up living their lives reactively instead of proactively. They live their life reacting to the world instead of shaping their own world. What we need to understand and remember is that we are the means by which this power acts in the world. And it will act in the world through us or around us. It will do it with us or in spite of us, just not necessarily to us or for us. The choice of how we live is ours and ours alone. God doesn't make our choices. It responds. It gives us what we expect. So we can refuse to see our good. We can refuse to accept it. We can deny it. We can close our eyes and pretend we don't see it. But we can't change the nature of this power that's always there to give us our heart's desire. All we can control is how much good we are willing to accept. So what this means is we don't have to spend any energy or prayer time trying to change God's mind. All we need to do is focus on changing ours, which makes perfect sense. If our experiences, this is the rationale behind it, if our experiences are going to come from our ideas and our beliefs, then we need to figure out how to give this process, this law of mind, some real first-class material to work with, okay? We need to fill our mind with ideas that are actually worth creating in our life. Now, let me give you an example. How many chocoholics do we have out there? And if you raise your hand, you know what I mean, okay? Over half, all right? Me too, Belgian chocolate, Leonidas, best, okay? Anyway, you can take the greatest chocolatier in the world, someone who makes chocolate, okay? You can set her or him up in a beautiful shop with all the most modern equipment and a highly trained staff to assist her. And then when she's ready to go to work, you can bring her some moldy cocoa, sour milk, and a box of artificial sweetener, and say, here you go, knock yourself out. It doesn't matter how talented she is, what she creates out of that kind of low-quality raw material is not going to be something you want to give your sweetie on Valentine's Day 2 weeks from now, okay? On the other hand, if you bring in rich, dark cocoa powder, straight from Africa, fresh cream, sweet butter, beautiful grains of sugar, what she creates out of those ingredients is probably going to curl your toes, okay? Just like the stuff you bought in Belgium. You bring that home to your sweetie on Valentine's, you might get lucky, you know? Anyway. Now, the same principle holds true in your life. What kind of raw material are you giving to your consciousness? To your consciousness, because that old computer phrase, garbage in, garbage out, is also a great piece of metaphysical wisdom. You see, sometimes we forget this is not about deciding how to use your mind or my mind or even God's mind, because there is only one mind. Quantum physics now even tells us we are all part of a unified consciousness. Every single one of us, we are all an inseparable part of this thing called life. Can't be separated from God, can't be separated from each other, can't be separated from the world. What we're talking about using here is a law. It's called the law of mind, and Dr. Holmes used the term, but he didn't invent it. And the law of mind is a spiritual process that applies to our thoughts at every single level. From the moment we feel the desire for something, a desire for change maybe, to when the idea first pops into our head, all the way to the physical manifestation when our idea shows up fully formed in our experience, that entire process from beginning to end. So using this process is the using this law is actually the process of learning how to deliberately draw an idea from the infinite source of all ideas, then examining that idea, nurturing it, and putting all the power and passion of our belief behind it, and then using the ever-present resources of the world to make it real. That's what the process is. Now, this is the point where someone always asks, if God is the source of all ideas, then does that mean that God is also the source of bad ideas? Good question. And the answer is no. No more than the sun is the cause of nighttime or light is the cause of darkness. But sometimes in our human experience, it feels that way, right? Sometimes it feels like it, okay? What we have to understand is that sometimes we can get a perfectly good idea and use it in an imperfect way. Anybody ever done that here? Okay. That's why sometimes ideas don't work and sometimes dreams don't come true. For example, we can create a wonderful, loving relationship and then screw it up in all sorts of ways. Okay. I know I've done it. That is not wisdom, it's experience, all right? We can attract lots of money into our life and throw it away on stupid things. We are born with this wonderful, amazing physical body, but we can and do abuse our health in all sorts of interesting ways, okay? In fact, in the case of our body, an illness or a breakdown is usually not just a physical problem. It's more often than not a mental and spiritual problem, too. I read an interview a number of years ago. I loved it. I kept this quote for a while. And it was a doctor who was very, very locked into traditional medicine, but he started to become interested in metaphysical healing in addition to supplement his practice because he said, "This." I love this quote. He said, "Some patients I see were actually draining into their bodies the diseased thoughts of their mind." Ooh, I heard some oohs, okay? Some patients were actually draining into their bodies the diseased thoughts of their mind. I've seen it happen, and so are you. The sad thing is, we don't just do this to ourselves with our body. We do it in all sorts of different areas of our life. So what we're talking about here, as Angela mentioned, is a principle that contains all possibility to infinity and beyond, okay? But it only shows up in our experience as a reflection of our own beliefs about our own possibilities and our own capabilities. So if the beliefs that we have, for whatever reason, they may be well justified, if our beliefs are based on fear or anger or greed or prejudice, and the only possibilities that we see in our life are more and more limitations, then that's what we create. Once again, garbage in, garbage out. It's a law. Now, I think one of the reasons some people have so much trouble accepting these ideas is when you do, and not everybody accepts them right off the bat, when you accept them, when you start to realize you are the only person that you can do, or the only person that you can do any real practical work on, the only person also happens to be the most stubborn, the most argumentative, and the most difficult person to change you will ever know, okay? And this person, of course, is you. Or in my case, it's me. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to us, okay? Which raises an interesting question, all right? Why do we find it so difficult to help ourselves? You know, why do we find it so difficult? So let's talk about that for a second. Well, for one thing, you are the only one who knows all the reasons, the rationalizations, and justifications for why your life is such a mess in one place or the other, okay? You know your history better than anyone else. You wrote your story, okay? You alone know the pain that you insist on hanging on to, the guilt or resentment that you can't let go of, and the excuses you use to keep putting off doing all the things that need to be done to create the life you want, okay? You and you alone, and me alone, procrastinate, avoid, ignore, and obfuscate, I love that word, all of the good ideas, the fantastic ideas that present themselves to us every moment of every day. But I'll tell you this, in our defense, okay? in my defense, anyway. As a practitioner and counselor for 20-some years, whatever I've been in it, I have found that it's much easier to see the solutions to other people's problems than it is to see my own, all right? You see, other people have problems because they think incorrectly. I have problems because the world is against me. Other people have problems because they're confused. I have problems because no one understands me, all right? That's where the statement comes from, there are none so blind than those who will not see, okay? You know, Dr. Holmes' greatest contribution to the spiritual wisdom of the world was something he called, Angela discussed it, spiritual mind treatment. And I understand because I was there where you were when I first came in the first time. I says, what the is that, okay? What a weird name for something I don't understand. And the name may be a little strange. We're talking about 100 years ago. But the concept itself is extremely powerful. Because all it is, really, is a mental and spiritual tool. It's just a tool. That's all it is. It's a technique that he developed that allows the person using it to get their mind and their heart more in tune, in harmony with this power that creates our life and our experiences through us. That's really all it is. But that's a lot. That's a lot. And I'm not going to spend time this morning going over how to do it. We teach it in classes. We got books and tapes you can get online. We've got practitioners and ministers here and at other centers in town that'll spend all the time you want. The list is in our newsletter and out front. But the point I want to get across to you this morning in the section of the introduction with Dr. Holmes called How to Use It, it being God, is that the consciousness behind the treatment, the consciousness behind the prayer is always more important than the words we use. Always more important. You see, intelligent prayer, which is intelligent thought, is not about impressing God, and it's not about impressing other people. It's about making an impression on our own consciousness and allowing that impression to take hold. Allowing it to take hold, to change our mind and keep it changed. It's about developing and maintaining faith, got to do them both, in a better idea. It's about perseverance, that's true. And it's about constantly moving in the direction of our greater good, no matter what doubts and fears get in the way. It's about being able to visualize a greater possibility, even when we can't see it yet. Even when we can't see it, knowing that once a belief is firmly embedded in us, it has to show up in our life. That's why Thomas Troward, one of the great influences on Dr. Holmes, one of my favorite statements in metaphysics when you start to understand it is, once an idea is held firmly enough in consciousness, the means to bring it about have already been set in motion. Think about that. Once an idea is held firmly enough in consciousness, the means to bring it about have already been set in motion. We ought to have that tattooed on our arm, okay? If you believe that there's value in what I'm talking about here and what we've talked about the last 4 weeks, if you like the idea of a power that's always present and always supportive, if you like the idea that you are the way this power works in your life and that it will do anything for you that you can believe and accept for yourself, then that is wonderful. It truly, truly is. If you believe that, then you are standing at the doorway of an amazing, fabulous new life experience far beyond anything you've ever known. But if you'd like to do more than stand at the threshold, if you would like to cross that threshold, there's one more thing you have to do. And this is true whether you're here for the first time or whether you've been coming here for years. Besides thinking more intelligently about God and thinking more highly of ourselves as the way that God works in the world, we have to make a commitment. I can see people cringing already, okay? Not a commitment to God or to this center or to this teaching, okay? Nobody has to come up and testify, all right? We simply need to make a commitment, a promise, a covenant with ourselves to think about life in the best way we possibly can all the time. All the time. That's all. That's all this is. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, whatever is going on around us, whatever happened to us, we need to expect the best and to accept it when it shows up, because it does show up. That's the yardstick we need to use to measure anything we decide to do or decide not to do in our life from here on out. My teacher, David's teacher also, Kennedy Schultz, amazing man, he once said this. I loved it. It stuck with me. He said, "Most religions are getting you ready to die. This one is getting you ready to live." Isn't that great? That's yours, Kennedy. I'll give you credit for that. So I guess the question is, are you ready to live? Okay? And by live, I don't just mean breathe and walk and eat and sleep and watch a movie now and then. Okay? I mean, are you ready to live life at a level that very few people ever attain? Good question. And if you are, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. I'm going to assume that 99.9% of you are ready, okay? And if you are, what are you willing to do to make that happen? Now, some people always want to know, well, I'm ready, but will it be easy? All right? And I give them the universal answer, it depends. Everybody can. Because, let's be honest, if we really and truly want to change our life, we are probably not going to do it without a little bit of inconvenience. Or maybe a lot of inconvenience. Because most of us, even the smartest and most put-together people, and I see a bunch of you out there, have spent a whole lot of years living with some extremely misguided and even self-destructive ideas firmly entrenched in our mind. And when we start replacing those ideas with better ideas, it's probably going to feel a little uncomfortable. It's probably going to feel a little unnatural when you let go of your stuff, okay? But if we just stick with it, just stick with it, eventually it will feel liberating and empowering. It will. I promise that it will. Because we will be taking our rightful place as a divine spiritual being in our own life. Okay? You know, you could have a brand new BMW, Mercedes, Tesla, Porsche Cayenne, whatever, in your garage, okay, bought and paid for, gassed up and ready to go, but if you don't learn how to drive it, or if you don't get in the driver's seat and actually turn the key, it's not going to do you any good. It might as well be a 4,000-pound paperweight, okay? In the same way, this teaching isn't going to do anything for you if you don't make a direct intention to begin to learn how to use it and then act on what you have learned. Act on what you have learned, okay? I mean, we spend a lot of time surrounded by a world that tells us we are weak, we are helpless, that tells us to be careful, a world that feeds our fears and negativity. So it takes constant, focused, and deeply dedicated attention to a better way of thinking and being to keep us mentally, emotionally, and spiritually in balance. That's why we need to take time every day to examine what is in our mind, and like Angela said, to weed our mind just like it's a flower bed or a vegetable garden, okay? I mean, if we are too busy to spend 15 minutes a day focusing on our own spiritual well-being, then the truth is we're just too busy, okay? And something needs to change, maybe our priorities, okay? So that means taking time to meditate, pray, look within, whatever you want to call it, on a regular basis. It means being around healthy-minded people and setting the others off free on their own with great love, okay? It means learning how to see good in the world when everybody else is looking for the bad. It means choosing thoughts that take us in the right direction and exercising emotions that positively support our best thoughts and beliefs. Now, if you do all that, you will be amazed how easy it is and you will be amazed at the results. I promise your whole life will change in ways you never imagined. I've seen it happen so many times because we are spiritual beings having a human experience in a world made only of God. That's your affirmation right there, okay? That is the way our heart and soul are meant to live. And this is the only way that we're ever going to heal any conflict, any disease, or any other undesirable experience that we find ourselves in, whether it's our own personal problems or the problems of a world that could benefit greatly from knowing something better, all right? So, now you got it. If you've been here all 4 weeks, you got it. If you just came today, you probably got most of it, okay? God, you, me, the world, and how to make it better. That's all we really need to know. And over the next 11 months, that's all David and I are really going to be talking about. Same stuff, all right? We'll break it down into smaller pieces, you know. We'll look at a few variations on a theme, relationships, health, all that stuff. We'll look at why we so often don't do the things we know we should be doing and why we let the world distract us. But if you do nothing more than take the ideas that we have been talking about over these last 4 weeks and you practice them and you apply them to your daily life, I promise that once again, once you go through this doorway that's facing you today, which is the doorway to the rest of your life, all right, you'll never look back. You will never look back. And you won't have to, because the path that you will be on is going to be taking you exactly where you want to go. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Reggie. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Take a moment here. As we do, I gave you a lot of information. Take the things that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just know this. Life is meant to be a joyful experience. We may experience loss or pain or fear, but we don't need to keep it. As we bring ourselves back to that center, the center that is within each of us, that same center, that presence, that process, that power, that divine thing that we call God, as we bring ourselves back to that all the time, our life is in balance. We can enjoy excitement, love, passion, all these things. But as we continually come back to the center, back to the center, back to the center, not only do we transform our own experience, we transform the world around us. And as each of us takes this responsibility for our own life, giving love freely without reservation, not judging others, as we expand our awareness touches the awareness of others, and we join together like drops of rain on a window, and we begin to move. We begin to move forward, which is the direction that life wants to go. So as we recognize that the world is not all the terrible things that we hear about, the terrible things that we read about, that these are simply aberrations created by people who have not realized the divine power that life presents us all, the opportunities, we look at it with kindness and compassion. We look at it knowing something better. And as we know something better, we think something better, and we act better in our own lives, this begins to transform the world. So this is the gift that we share with friends. It's the gift we teach our children. It is the gift that we enjoy with those we love, with our friends that we connect with most deeply. And we give thanks. We give thanks for knowing these things. We give thanks for this incredible physical world that we can live and move and play in every day, for all the incredible opportunities for travel and enjoyment and creativity and success. All these amazing opportunities that we have, whether we're starting our own business, whether we're starting a family, whether we're starting out in a new place. The power is always with us. It never changes. So as we recognize this and accept this truth for ourselves and embrace it, we release these ideas into consciousness, knowing that they return to us frequently, multiplied abundantly. We give thanks for this awareness, and we let it go, knowing it is the truth for us now and always. Please join me in saying, and so it is.